What's up, aspiring and current houseplant parents? Welcome to the Indoor Jungle Podcast. I am Storm Shaw, here to bring you houseplant inspiration, tips on how to curate your indoor jungle on a budget, and other information about keeping those sweet green babies alive. Welcome back to the post-holiday episode of the Indoor Jungle. I took some time off. I'm a high school teacher, so I just needed a little bit of a break. And here we are. We're back. So we've talked so far in a couple episodes just about how to get started, the very basics, why you should collect houseplants, what kind of houseplants are great starter plants, and then how to pot and repot plants once you've got them. So now I want to kind of start to shift the episode and kind of talk about different plant categories, I guess. And one that I've been really interested in lately is ferns. So this episode's going to be all about ferns. Here we go. So ferns are a pretty fascinating group of plants. I actually only have one fern in my collection. It's a bird's nest fern, which is a pretty popular one right now. And it's a little different than kind of the normal ferns, quote unquote, that you're probably familiar with, you know, the separated out little fronds, which is what the leaves of a fern are called. And instead, it's got these sort of narrow, solid fronds that kind of waver at the edges rather than being separated out into little individual kind of delicate fronds that you might be familiar with. If you look at the thumbnail for this episode, I'll put one of the more common frond images on there. But yeah, they're unique in a lot of ways. I've actually been really interested in ferns for a long time because they're one of the oldest plants on Earth, actually. And in fact, they predate even dinosaurs by about 200 million years. So they've been around for a long time. They know how to adapt. They know how to survive, basically. And if you think about kind of what the world has been through in that time span, it's a giant asteroid impact, ice ages, etc., and they've survived. They have developed really interesting ways of reproducing that I'm going to get into a little bit later, and are really versatile plants in terms of where they can grow and exist and thrive. A lot of people think they kind of only grow in places that are shady and wet, but that's not necessarily true. They're pretty much everywhere. They can grow in moist places, shady forests, like down in little crevices and cracks and rocks. They can actually grow on tropical trees and acid wetlands. Yeah, a lot of different places. There's even some that can grow in colder climates. One of the things I find most interesting about ferns and the way that they have managed to reproduce is one of the oldest means of reproduction, and it doesn't rely on pollination or bees or, you know, other insects that are common pollinators. They actually reproduce via spores, which kind of sounds gross, but it's basically just dust or powder, similar to, like I said, gross, but similar to fungus, molds, etc. But this is just a really reliable method for reproduction that doesn't require any sort of pollinators, because the wind can spread the spores and those spores can, you know, do their thing, which I'll talk about here in more detail in a little bit. But yeah, so usually basically what happens is there is some leaves or fronds that have spores on the underside and some that don't. They actually have different names. The fronds that have spores on them are called sporophylls, and the ones that don't are called trophophylls. And basically, the trophophylls are fronds that do the photosynthesis, taking in sunlight, producing sugars and food, and, you know, releasing oxygen. And then the sporophylls' functions are to produce spores and release those spores. They often look similar. It's hard to tell the difference basically between the two types of fronds, but they actually have different functions And then not only do they have those two different types of fronds, but there's actually like ferns are multi-generational to complete the life cycle. And basically spores, when they become active or fertilized, when spores become active and start growing, they don't grow like a seed does necessarily directly into the plant. They grow into a haploid plant, which basically is like the easiest comparison you can make is like a spore is going to grow into a haploid plant, which is the first generation plant, and is one part of the two parts necessary for a diploid cell, which becomes a zygote. If you think of, you know, mammalian reproduction, almost like a sperm or an egg, and then there has to be another haploid plant that also, you know, is the opposite, and then they need some sort of water medium to actually get one of the haploid plants to the other haploid plant and then fertilize, and then that becomes the adult plant as we know it, or as it grows into the fern. So that's the most common way, is you actually have to have sort of a quote-unquote male-female haploid plant that has a water medium to mix those spores that then grows into the adult plant. What's actually really interesting, though, about ferns is the fact that they've not only evolved and adapted to reproduce this way that doesn't require pollination, but they can reproduce in ways outside of that in case, you know, it's too dry or there's no other ferns around for some reason. They have means of asexual reproduction that, you know, doesn't require an opposing sort of haploid plant. And so not only do they have means of asexual reproduction, they have multiple means of asexual reproduction. So ferns really are masters at surviving and figuring out ways to reproduce and spread. The first method of asexual reproduction is called apogamy, and it's where one of those fronds that produces spores, typically the sporophyte, actually turns into a gametophyte, which is basically the thing that the spore usually grows into, the little haploid plant that needs fertilization. So something on one of the fronds on the plant becomes something itself that can be fertilized by itself, if that makes sense. And this usually will happen if the surrounding area is too dry, because the plant can essentially detect that if it's putting out spores, they're not going to have any sort of water medium to mix with another haploid. So itself produces something that it can fertilize. So basically, don't tell a fern to go fuck itself, because it will. So then what happens is basically at the end of the frond, or at the tip of the frond, these little babies will grow, because it's essentially created this part of itself that can be fertilized by itself, and then it starts putting off little versions of itself, and they get heavier and heavier, break off and fall to the ground, and then root, essentially creating little self-propagates. And finally, they can grow through rhizomes, which are root-like structures. If you have, I talked about snake plants, Sansevieria, or mother-in-law's tongue in an earlier episode, ferns can actually do the same thing. So basically the roots go down, and then part of the root structure is this rhizome, and it spreads out and sprouts baby ferns out of the soil nearby. In both of these instances, then the babies or the new plants, whatever, are identical to their parents. They can skip a lot of work this way to reproduce, but the problem with this is that there's not any sort of adaptation, right? The whole point of mixing with other plants is to develop immunity to certain environmental threats, to, you know, allow room for natural selection mutations, etc., that will make the plant increase the plant's survivability. And so these asexual forms of reproduction are typically only used in times of drought or harsher conditions where the plant essentially is focused on surviving immediately rather than attempting to mix its DNA with another nearby fern. So then I also wanted to talk about how ferns went from these beautiful outdoor plants to becoming a houseplant staple, which really happened in the Victorian era. The Victorians really became obsessed with ferns. It was in their fashion, it was in art. There's all these images of ferns showing up in things. And there, it was so intense and actually so present in sort of this art and culture of Victorian era that there was a term for it called pteridomania, which means fern fever, basically. And yeah, like I said, the fern showed up in pottery, glass, metal, textiles, wood, sculpture, gravestones, memorials. I mean, ferns were everywhere in the Victorian period. And they would put actual ferns in urns or these like glass cases that were sort of around before terrariums were a thing, called Wardian cases. And you probably, if you've seen like any of the Sherlock Holmes renditions or any sort of Victorian era films where someone's wealthy in it, people always have these conservatories, right? Or if you've played Clue, there's a conservatory, and it's these beautiful sort of attached greenhouses, and they're always filled with ferns. Eventually, this fern fever, the pteridomania, shifted and gave way to orchids, but the fascination, the tradition has stuck around, and now ferns are actively part of any good houseplant collection, even in 2020. All right, so I've kind of covered basically the very quick history of ferns, their reproduction style, and now I want to get into, obviously, we're talking about houseplants here, which means how to care for your fern in your home. The thing that's kind of different about ferns from some other houseplants is actually tied to some of that, you know, their original environment that they're found in. And that's that they are often on the forest floor or nearby the forest floor, or basically just places that they get a pretty good supply of slowly decaying organic stuff, you know, leaves, grasses, other things that fall right down from above and then slowly decay. And so they actually do well with a layer of compost, and you know, you have to rotate it. So put a layer of compost on there, keep it moist, not soaking, but kind of a little bit of water, maybe spray it. And then every week or two, you kind of have to take off that compost, put on a new layer, keep it wet, etc. That's like optimal conditions for your fern because it likes that slow decay, and that's how it takes in its nutrients. There is also the option of fertilizers if the composting method kind of grosses you out, or you don't want to deal with the smell, or if it's giving you fungus gnat problems, then you can use some sort of weak liquid fertilizer. They also make these slow release pellet fertilizers that can work nicely. Just make sure you get the ratio correct for your plant. You need to make sure you maintain humidity for these. So ferns do really well in a bathroom, for example, because if you shower, etc., it's typically the most humid room in your house. But if you don't want it in the bathroom, then kind of, you know, when you get up, what I do is I get up for work, I make my morning coffee, and any of my plants that need higher humidity, I either have them in a pebble tray. So I pour a little bit of water into their pebble tray to increase the humidity around the plant, but it's on some pebbles in the drain tray so that the water can't get soaked up into the soil, but it slowly evaporates around it and creates that humidity. Or you can just kind of mist around the plant with a sprayer. to accomplish that as well. The main thing there is to never really let your fern dry out completely, at least the surrounding area. A really important thing with ferns, especially the bird's nest fern, which gets its name from that kind of center part between the fronds, where there's the new fronds growing up, and there's all these this spore-like fuzzy brown material. It looks like a bird's nest. Is when you water it to lift the fronds and water around the base of the plant, not over the top, because if you get that center part wet, it can actually kill it. So making sure you understand how your fern likes to be watered and what parts of it doesn't want to get wet, things like that. And then lighting conditions for ferns is actually, they like a lot of light. Their natural condition is typically dappled light, you know, because it's, again, on the forest floor, and it gets the light that comes down through the trees, through the upper branches. But it's going to do better in bright light. It likes that light to be a little bit filtered. So if you've got, you know, let's say a south-facing window and you've got some plants up on that ledge, then the fern would do really well just behind some of those plants so that the sun shines through the plants in the window and then still hits the fern pretty directly, but through the leaves of some of your other plants. I've got mine behind a rubber plant and a monstera, so it can kind of shine through those leaves and it gets that dappled sunlight all day long. So that's been a quick look into the world of ferns and their needs as a houseplant, and I hope that maybe in some of you I've inspired some pteridomania, a little bit of fern fever, and you go out and get yourself your first fern. Please check out my Instagram at plantdaddykc. I've also got a Wix website that's linked there on my Instagram in the bio, with some blog content if you want some more houseplant information. And keep your eye out for a more recent post where I'm going to be putting up some information about a repotting service if you're in the Kansas City area. So if you've got plants and you are worried about the repotting process, or you just don't like doing the repotting yourself, if you've got a pot that you want to put it in, I'll do the repotting for you and provide the soil and do the whole thing, make it nice and neat and pretty and ready to go. So yeah, check that out, and you can DM me at plantdaddykc. And the first person to DM me about the repotting service, I'm going to give a 50% discount. So if you've got a couple plants you want repotted, I'll do it for half the price, and I'll tell you what the normal prices are and all that, and then give you half off so that I can use that on the Instagram to show people what the process looks like. I hope to hear from some of you guys soon. If I've reached out to you on Instagram and asked you about doing an interview, hang tight. I want to get about maybe 10 episodes in. I'm going to do one of these a week. I just took some week off for the holidays, but hang tight. I just want to get a little bit of a following so that it's worth your time, and I look forward to doing some more of these.